The main thing is the competitive landscape. That's what's creating the dislocation. You know, people are looking at Microsoft and to some extent, you know, Google's workplace. And there's other competitors out there, you know, from Five9 to RingCentral to Avaya. And I think, you know, ultimately that's what's creating it. But our opinion is pretty straightforward. And here it is. All right. Hey, everybody. Sean Emery, the co-founder and chief investment officer of Avery & Company. You know, we have a company primer for you today. This is the Inside Scoop podcast. We're taking a deeper dive into Zoom today. And I think what we want to do on these company primers is really highlight, you know, companies that we think are dislocated one way or another, and then provide some sort of framework for you to, you know, gauge for yourself. Again, these aren't recommendations for investments or anything. They're more, you know, inside the inner thoughts of, you know, how we're thinking about, you know, investments, industries, and such. The storyline today is, you know, we think underneath the surface, you know, this was a COVID beneficiary. It's been unloved ever since. We think underneath, again, the noise presents somewhat of a compelling opportunity. We'll go over, you know, what they do, their products today, you know, where we think the product portfolio can go in the future, you know, who leads the team, what's the compensation structure, and, you know, are they truly aligned with investors, and what's the competition looking like? Ding, ding, right there. That's obviously where, you know, a lot of, I think, the dislocation comes from. But, you know, are there economic moats, or are there any, you know, competitive advantages that we think can help them defend competition? Where does growth come from? And then how do we think about, you know, valuation in terms of a framework? So expect that going forward with these primers. And that's ultimately what it's about. So this is Inside Scoop podcast, company primer edition. If you like this, make sure to like it, subscribe, share with your friends. Only then we'll know, you know, that you want more of these. So before that, here's a quick disclaimer. This is the Inside Scoop podcast, an investing and research focused podcast owned by Avery & Company, manager located in Miami, Florida, investing where the world is headed. This should not be viewed as a recommendation for the purchase or sale of any securities mentioned. If you'd like to learn more about Avery, please visit our website at avery.xyz. That's www.avery.xyz. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. You know, it's a five-star podcast, so that always helps. So if we start with the product here, you know, Zoom is a household name. There's no, you know, story about that. And, you know, Zoom, to one extent, is synonymous with video meetings, and that's a powerful thing to have. Like Kleenex and, you know, some of the other brands that have come before them. Just having that brand recognition doesn't really allow a company to operate, you know, forever. But we do think that, you know, for a time being, that really, you know, defends themselves, you know, allows them to have, you know, that brand power, and doesn't allow maybe upstart companies to really gain traction. At the heart of Zoom's offering is really Zoom Meetings, a robust video conferencing, you know, solution. They have the free tier, they have the paid tier, multiple peer tier, paid tiers now, bundled solutions as well. You know, we think Zoom wins specifically on the product side, just based on their user-friendly interface, you know, cross-platform compatibility, and most importantly, and, you know, reliability. You know, these meetings have to work every time and be pretty seamless to get on. So that's really the starting point, the jump-off point for Zoom. For someone looking to, you know, analyze Zoom, they should be looking beyond meetings, though, at least in our opinion. We're investors here, so keep that in mind. But, you know, we're trying to be very pointed in terms of what we're saying. We want to be real in terms of what we're saying. What's our opinion? And, you know, if there's ever any feedback, you know, we're always happy to listen. But they have to move beyond meetings. So there's Zoom. You know, Zoom has Zoom One. That's their bundled offering. That's seen strong uptake recently. It incorporates some of their lesser known, but I think, you know, pretty valuable offerings. So you have Zoom Team Chat. You know, this is their version of Slack or even, you know, the communication portal people use within Teams. It's really for internal teams to communicate, collaborate. We use it here at Avery, and we, you know, we were Slack users prior, and, you know, they have this little migration tool where you can, you know, take all your messages and channels and seamlessly, you know, move Slack to Zoom Team Chat. So that helps, and also has a pretty, you know, robust app ecosystem today, and they're continuing to add there. It's embedded in Zoom One, and that's the theory. You get meetings as part of that, you know, Team Chat for free, in theory. On top of that, you get Zoom Whiteboard, which also comes with it. So if you're a user of like Miro or FigJam, or you use like whiteboarding, then having this for free and really incorporated into remote meetings makes sense. And having all of that, you know, talk to each other. They have AI Companion that comes with Zoom One as well. And that provides, you know, real-time translation. I think most importantly, though, is their AI summary capabilities today. And it's really a feature, but we think it's best in class. And, you know, some people in the industry that we've spoken with also, you know, believe it's best in class. We use it internally. I think it's, they're taking a differentiated approach here in AI. Not only do they have an investment in one of the leaders in Anthropic, but they're also taking a federated approach. So they're not relying on any single foundational model. They're actually using, you know, multiple and then building on top of it. And then, you know, obviously directing and redirecting, call it workloads where it needs to go. So we think that's important for, you know, the future of them. Their product, their AI product, really their summary really competes against, you know, the Otter AIs and the Fathom, some of the stuff you see when you're in meetings. And, you know, Otter AI was really first at this kind of note-taking crowd and Zoom Team Chat. Like, I mean, Zoom AI is, you know, first class. You know, it records your meeting. You'll have a pretty detailed summary. You can edit it post if you wanted to fix some stuff. But then it has like your takeaways at the end. And, you know, for us internally, it's really powerful stuff. They also have other stuff like Zoom Clips. And that's what it sounds like. It's like clips of videos. It's really around asynchronous activity that you do, you know, within your team. You can set up, you know, demo videos or how-to videos. You know, if you were logging into a website and you wanted to show someone, you take a Zoom clip. This is bundled in, again, into like a $12, $13 a month Zoom One bundle. Everything I just talked about is actually. And the Zoom Clips is the equivalent of Loom. That was just actually purchased by Atlassian. So Loom was, you know, the big kind of asynchronous, you know, clips or video recording tool that a lot of people use for demos and such. Again, it's bundled in here. And that's it. Like inside your workplace, we think there's more stuff that they're doing. You know, they have notes on the way, docs on the way, calendar on the way. They just shared many of these things at their recent Zoomtopia. So I would say those are more like features and you know adjacent products. But, you know, really to move the needle here in terms of like revenue generating products, you have to start talking about Zoom Phone, Zoom Contact Center, Zoom Scheduler, which is the equivalent of Calendly. We use it internally as well. We switched. It was obviously cheaper and, you know, more embedded into, you know, our workflow. Zoom Webinar and Events. Clearly, we all know what that is. And then Zoom Rooms, which is really for, you know, in-person office, you know, making sure you're, you know, if you're in your office and you wanted to go to the conference room, you can seamlessly move from, you know, Zoom on your desktop to Zoom in the conference room. You know, these together put Zoom into really other parts of your organization. So it moves you from, you know, this external Zoom meeting functionality to really more internal usage. Zoom Contact Center obviously is real deep internal. Zoom Phone is really internal, you know. Zoom Rooms is really around being internal. And I think that's a big distinction here, like internal usage or products versus external usage products. And I think Zoom's product portfolio continues to go in that direction. This will drive growth, you know, attach rates. And therefore, you know, as, you know, people get into multi-products, I think that ultimately reduces churn as well. And that's the story, like from a product perspective, is like they continue to have to evolve and go left and right. Now, the problem that they're ultimately trying to solve here really is around, you know, collaboration, communication. It's not hard to understand the problem, but I think if you really think about it, the question is, you know, hybrid, remote, work from home, work in the office, like what's ultimately going to be the end result and where does the world normalize? I think, you know, we could say today that the world's, you know, normalized. But remote work, even if it's one day, even if you have 20% of your workforce, let's say your sales reps are all out in the field, like having the remote capabilities, having that collaboration seamlessly makes a lot of sense. So it makes a lot of sense to have that internal, external communication. But most importantly, you have to have things like governance and traceability and security involved. And that's where having like an enterprise ready, you know, product makes sense. This is happening, you know, in several ways. First, if you're looking for tools to help facilitate, you know, communication, you have everything from, again, Zoom Rooms to Zoom Phone to Contact Center to Zoom Clips. Now, the next kind of, I think, phase of adoption or like, you know, macro trend that's taking place is really around, you know, cloud. Companies don't necessarily want to manage all of their own internal stack. So the problem there is, again, you want to turn to more cloud-enabled products and as a service products. And, you know, Zoom Phone is just that. You know, bring your own device where, you know, you can have, today it's like, you know, or really still today is you have phone lines tethered to physical cables in offices. And with Zoom Phone, you basically have, you know, internet-based phones in the office, you know, bring your own device mantra, have employees use Zoom Phone on their phone, and they can have their personal and business line all on one device with governance and traceability and reliability. I use it myself on my personal device. I have Zoom Phone. So you call my office line, you know, it rings the same device. Also my desktop app for Zoom, it, you know, if you're calling me, it'll show up on my computer and, you know, you pick up normal. So customers again are looking for cloud solutions. Then you have like governance around all this stuff and security and Zoom, you know, FedRAMP and all the other certifications across, you know, education and healthcare, really important distinctions to have or accreditations to have, but you know, they also don't use the public cloud in any sort of meaningful way. And I think that ultimately gives them full control of their infrastructure for security and governance purposes, but also for computing costs. We've heard that from other companies as well, like Dropbox, that, you know, went off the public cloud. So the general thesis or what, you know, Zoom, how they build product is, you know, they launch in the public cloud, then they optimize it. They optimize the product, they optimize the spend, and then they move that onto on-prem or private cloud. So we think that's important. You know, the next phase I think that's important to look at is you know, leadership. You know, are they aligned? Are they have they executed well? Things like that. So Eric Yuan, he doesn't necessarily need a real introduction. He was on the early WebEx team, left there, started Zoom in stealth mode, quickly ramped up. I think the key characteristics of him, however, are he raised a bunch of capital that they never used and left on the balance sheet. So he was always prudent. And you're seeing that today, $6 billion of cash, net cash, so that, you know, no debt. And he's really shown this disciplined approach to cash management. And we'll talk about that more shortly. But Eric Yuan, Kelly Steckelberg, the CFO, we think, you know, they perform well from an operating standpoint. You know, they came to market in terms of, you know, call it to the public markets, 2019 timeframe. And they've been really prudent in terms of capital allocation, not, you know, going over their skis one direction or the other in terms of investment. And they've also grown their business significantly. If you go back to, you know, obviously pre-COVID, $1 billion in revenue, $4 billion today, all that happening in a really condensed period, which, you know, from an operational standpoint is really difficult. And all through that process, obviously, you know, margins and revenue has grown. You know, even since COVID, you know, they grew 4 quarters to 3 quarters in a row at like 300%+. And even today, you know, they're still growing and expecting to grow. And that's really happening without a lot of, you know, the cross product adoption just yet. There's some there and I'll talk about that, but you know, that's just the core product. So it's pretty interesting to think of it in those terms. Eric Yuan, significant stake in Zoom. So is he aligned, you know, north of 20%? That's assuming, you know, his current stake plus grants. He's compensated well, you know, he makes $450 a year, but also the performance bonuses and then, you know, long-term equity awards that he receives. The key on the performance bonus is 70% of that is tied to, you know, monthly recurring revenue. So obviously, you know, really tied to top line. You can't really, you know, adjust top line performance. And then 30% is, you know, tied to non-GAAP operating income. And there, obviously, stock-based comp comes into play. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about that. But net-net, over the last 4 years, they do these so far, these kind of like 4 or 5 year long-term grants, which are pretty darn big. But, you know, $18 million a year on average, they had a big one, you know, 2 years ago. But on a 4 year period, you know, it nets out to $18 million a year, which is a lot of money. And, you know, but that puts them in 50 to 75% percentile of kind of enterprise SaaS compensation. Now, turning to the competitive positioning, I think this is arguably the most important area from a understanding standpoint or having a point of view. This is probably where a lot of the dislocation does come from in our conversations with, you know, other people in the investment world. I think that's the first reaction is, you know, what about Microsoft? So the main competition here remains Microsoft, to some extent Google, given the workplace product. There's also competitors, you know, from the likes of WebEx on meetings, you know, Five9, 8x8, RingCentral, Avaya, when it comes to phones and contact center. Salesforce obviously owns Slack, so they compete on, you know, that collaboration space. But if we're looking at, you know, who truly competes on a cloud first, you know, fully unified, meaning going from chat to video to phone, you know, the biggest one out there is obviously Microsoft. And for us to understand that, we think we have to look at it in different ways. You know, what are the stats say and what's the makeup of the market? But we think generally, it's overstated in terms of competition for Microsoft. It's there, so don't get me wrong, but this is how we're thinking about it. Number one, you know, there's a massive ecosystem out there of companies that are not using Microsoft. So think of, you know, best in class product company or companies using best in class things like Slack, Zoom for video, you know, Google for their, you know, docs and sheets and stuff. And then they're also using things like Dropbox and Box and, you know, just best in class. Then you have companies that compete against Microsoft. So there's this whole suite of non-Microsoft usage. And then there's this whole, you know, competitive dynamic towards Microsoft. And, you know, as Microsoft gets bigger and bigger, they compete against more companies. The you know, LinkedIn, Activision now, Xbox, email solutions. And that's why you're seeing companies like Dropbox or Intuit, you know, they're using Zoom end-to-end across the board, across many of the products I mentioned before. So the rationale there is, who wants to have all their communication running through your competitors' data centers and applications? And, you know, it's not to say that anything negative is actually going on, but it's, you know, if you're planning and Zoom's actually a good product, you know, why not go with that? And it's priced really appropriately. Two is really, you know, the data. So we look at the Okta business report that they publish, and we've, you know, we went back and looked at all of them, and we look at them all the time, but you know, this past report, you look at Okta's customers, you can, they can basically see which one of their customers, this is for single sign-on, you know, logging on to applications and software usage. They can see who's using what in terms of, you know, cross usage of software apps. And long story short here is the latest report showed that Zoom actually increased its penetration inside of Microsoft 365 accounts year over year. So, you know, they're actually growing inside of Microsoft accounts, which is, you know, somewhat counterintuitive to what the narrative is. And if you go back to the growth profile of, like, you know, they've grown ever since COVID, yet, you know, their second and third order products outside of just meetings has been actually, you know, a small part of their business up until now. I think that also suggests the same thing. And the niche for them, I think, is really the product works, and that gives them kind of a leg up in terms of quality and reasons to, you know, stay put. Zoom is also known to price aggressively. So Zoom One is $13 a month. And, you know, if you do the math about the other products I talked about, Slack, Zoom, you know, Otter AI, the Miro, FigJam, Calendly, the replacement for Scheduler, all those combined would run you about like $40 to $50 a month. You get all that functionality for $13 to $17 a month with Zoom. So for another $12, you now have Zoom Phone, which again takes maybe the total with them to $25 a month. But that would compete or compare against, you know, $50 to $60 for a best-in-class solution. So they're priced really well. So that's really it from a, you know, what I would say more of some competitive positioning. But the key question long-term is, you know, have they established a moat? Are they developing a moat? And what could that look like? So for us, we think the really thing that sticks out. So we know that Zoom Online Business, which is customers that come on the Zoom platform without reps, this is about 40% of revenue. And in theory, you know, it's the most susceptible to churn, just given its lower user counts inside of these organizations. And therefore, they likely use less products. And churn here fell to 3%, which is, you know, the lowest it's been, you know, prior to COVID. So something is proving out. I think with revenue rising since COVID, their enterprise business doing well, of which they have, you know, 219 accounts. That's growing recently. And again, you know, those are basically accounts that have a sales rep attached to them. So it's not like truly enterprise in terms of how people, you know, define enterprise. And these are, again, people that are using Zoom, whether it's through a sales rep directly on Zoom or resellers. They have over 3,700 customers paying $100,000 or more. And that grew double digits here recently. So the question there is, like, what could be driving this retaining of users and revenue growth across the board? And again, not to say that revenue is growing dramatically. You know, you're talking about single digits today. But I think bigger picture is when you look forward is, and we'll talk about growth in the growth section, can they grow and how? But on the moat side, we think, you know, intellectual property, brand, owned data centers, reliability, these are important. I think medium term, shorter term, these are durable kind of competitive advantages they have. But we do think over time, these will be replicated. So today they're a core advantage, you know, futuristically more commoditized. Then we move into network effects and thinking about, you know, is there evidence of network effects at play, but maybe less durable than, let's say, you know, credit card networks or social networks. If we're using, you know, Metcalfe's law, where networks become more valuable exponentially really as more users join, then I wouldn't characterize meetings, Zoom meetings, as a likely fit. However, I do think, you know, there is some value and durability to knowing that someone on the other side likely knows how to use it, has a Zoom account. Therefore, it's, you know, a credible solution. So network effects, there's some aspects here that I think you could apply, but, you know, bigger picture, I don't apply too much weight to, you know, network effects for Zoom. Switching costs. This is arguably, you know, where I think Zoom has the biggest moat / potential moat and the biggest opportunity to drive a wider moat, you know, over time. And it's the release of many of their recent products over the years. We have seen, you know, pretty significant uptake in full suite adoption. I'll talk more about that. With more products being attached, as we have seen kind of with other companies, it really does create real stickiness and there's a correlation to churn. So, and when I say that, I'm looking at other software companies that, you know, display product growth and therefore, you know, further or reducing churn all across the board. It makes some sense. You know, if you roll out, you know, Zoom Phone to 2,000 employees, get them using Zoom, Team Chat, then they're using meetings and then they're becoming a Zoom scheduler client and scheduling all their meetings on there. And, you know, then they have AI functionality and getting notes and summaries from AI and clips as well. And having a database of all these clips that they've, you know, maybe they're showing their colleague how to do stuff. And many of those clips are saved for future use. You can obviously see how that drives switching costs. And one stat we know is that back in 2022, they had an investor day. And at that time, they had about 10% of enterprise customers using 3 or 4 products. Obviously, today they have more products than that. But that group made up 50% of ARR, and annualized recurring revenue. And that ARR at the time was growing 45%. So I suspect those numbers are higher today. And the products, the potential product adoption is also, you know, higher than today. Now, growth, what are the two, or what are the main areas? And we think there's two growth areas, and we call it like a growth algorithm. And then we'll talk about valuation framework. But growth will come from, number one, reduced churn, which sounds counterintuitive. But obviously, if maybe there's less people on the top, but you're reducing churn, obviously, you can, you know, you can improve your revenue profile going forward. And we think that ultimately come from product attachments. In addition to, you know, something like stable macro, where if people are firing employees, you know, you're naturally losing seat counts. And as that stabilizes or even grows, you get growth from that. Now, the second, you know, is growth in products, and that's probably pretty obvious, but Zoom Phone comes in around at $13 per user per month. They have gone from 1 million Zoom Phone seats to 7 million, you know, growing double digits today. They're the fastest cloud Zoom, phone provider to date. And, you know, channel checks, when we talk to agencies or resellers, you know, they verify that, you know, Zoom's a really strong player here, both on the product side and the pricing side. There's over, you know, 460 million desktop phones. And this is to kind of put into some perspective. And that equates to, you know, $25 billion in revenue. And this is us just simply assuming, okay, $5 per user per month across that base of phones. And then at a current run rate of, you know, $500 million today for Zoom Phone, double digits, you know, obviously there's real opportunity there. They're not going to capture that whole, you know, revenue opportunity, but it does suggest plenty of runway. Zoom Contact Center, big opportunity as well. If we do kind of similar math, try to size it up, Zoom Contact Centers for support agents. And the list price there is $79 per user per month. And if you know, take that, you use an annual rate of $2 million per support team, that's 2,000 users at that per user per month rate. Essentially, you know, that size is a $2 million run rate opportunity. Now, if we assume, you know, they take 30% share of just the Fortune 500 and assume 2,000 seats each at that list price, that's $300 million in revenue. And again, there's more than the Fortune 500. Seat counts are much bigger than 2,000 seats at many of those. And the list price actually, you know, would likely be lower than that with those type of companies. But it does suggest the opportunity as companies move from, you know, on-premise, you know, contact center to more cloud, you know, centric. And that's it. I think that's the biggest two drivers. Now, we also see them using their $6 billion of net cash and either buying revenue from, you know, other areas like communication platforms. They attempted to buy Five9. We could see other attempts in this area for sure, or we could see them moving more into productivity and collaboration. So think tools like Box or Dropbox or Asana, or even, you know, taking Slack off of Salesforce's hands. You know, we don't have any insight into which one, but, you know, we've, you know, speaking to them and also, you know, hearing them speak, in group settings, you know, there's definitely interest in, you know, more productivity and collaboration tools. Last section is really around valuation. I think it starts with the current valuation and cash position. You know, if you assume that Zoom is a durable, long-term business driven by multi-product portfolios and attaching those products over time, moving into areas like phone, contact center, which they have done so there's evidence, moving into other areas that make sense. You know, here at a 10 to 12 multiple free cash flow, we don't think that makes any sense. Enterprise SaaS companies, you know, they've warranted, 18 to 30 multiples at, when people recognize that these are durable, long-term sticky businesses inside of enterprises that don't want change. And that's switching costs. That's ultimately where, that competitive advantage eventually comes from. Nearly 30% of the market cap is cash. It's probably higher than that now. And, they continue to reduce their stock-based comp as a percent of revenue. There was, a couple years ago, they re-upped some of their stock-based comp to their team as the stock fell, because obviously they were giving grants and shares at, $600 a share. We weren't, anywhere close to being investors at that point, but they were giving their employees at that. And obviously as the stock fell, they had to true them up for the sake of retaining. And that's showing up in stock-based comp today, and then it'll start to subside over the coming years. Now, in a situation where growth does not accelerate, we also think that, there's valuation support here and capital, like a balance sheet support as well, where maybe private equity or strategic buyer comes in. So there's some of that in terms of margin of safety, but the valuation framework is simply around, multiple expansion, getting, multiple expansion driven by confidence in that this is a durable long-term business. And then two is the product attachments and attach rates, which will ultimately drive, revenue and earnings over time. You get that, you get some pretty interesting figures, not to share them on here. But I think the last thing is what could go wrong. So it's all about execution. Can they continue to drive the growth of their Zoom One licenses and really bundle Zoom Phone and Zoom Contact Center? Zoom Phone is 10% of revenue. Zoom Contact Center just has 700 seats now. They just launched it, which is a really big deal. They just landed a 2,000 support staff and some pretty large wins. But execution, if they do this, they should continue to keep their customers and fend off churn. Now, another issue, that could potentially come up is they have a lot of cash. They've been prudent, but do they do a mega acquisition that is strategically, out of focus or very expensive? I would say those are the two main things about that. So that's it. I think we covered, everything from, compensation inside the organization, the product portfolio. I think that's so important. The product portfolio, as that ultimately is what drives the value of this business. And then having a valuation framework along with, competitive dynamics. All of it flows together to make a, a real decision here. But with that, go try Zoom One. If you have Slack and Zoom, or Calendly or Miro, go from Calendly to Zoom Scheduler, you'll save money. Go from, all that, you'll save, a lot of money. I talked about it earlier. And that's it for this company primer. I hope you liked it. We'll continue to work on these. But make sure to subscribe, like this, share with friends. The more of that, the more we want to share our findings with you. But with that, have a good day.